Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Andy Rouse. Before I bring him on, a couple of announcements. March 11th, 12th, and 13th, you're going to get Forbidden Knowledge News Con. We're going to have 8 amazing presenters. It's going to be online with a Rockfin Premium membership. And that means you can get the entire conference for only $10. All you have to do is sign up through that Rockfin link in the description, and you're going to get access to not only the conference, you get all our premium content, and you get all the content from every creator on Rockfin. And you can always get new episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Check out the podcast we feature on the Forbidden Knowledge Network. You get those on our website. Our website is forbiddenknowledge.news. Go check that out. We've got some amazing shows on there. We've got a new one coming, The Ancient Gift, hosted by October Hollum. Also, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Those links are all in the description as well. And with the state of the supply chain right now, it would be a great time to invest in emergency food supply from My Patriot Supply. They're the experts in emergency preparedness, and right now, if you order their emergency food, which stays good in storage for up to 25 years, you can get up to $100 off a 2-week supply. Just click the link in the description and get your emergency food supply today. Today, I want to welcome Andy Rouse. He is host of the Deep Share podcast, Worship in the Storm, and the New Roots of Creation podcast. He is a psychedelic explorer and meditating metalhead, obsessed with the ancient world and the divine symbolism that connects us all through time and space. Andy, welcome. How you doing?
Good, man. Nice to see you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course, man. It's great to see you again. It's great to have you on the show. You have some wonderful podcasts. I've been listening to some Deep Share episodes, and I love just what you're doing. And I also love to see how many people are using podcasting as a means not only to spread information, but the most occulted, hidden, and powerful information really in existence. And who would have thought that some of this profound information that I've learned myself by doing the show would be from podcasters. So, you know, we live in fascinating times, I believe very crucial times. And for some reason, podcasters are kind of leading this obscure revolution. It's very interesting. But what got you started down this strange and wonderful road of podcasting?
So I completely agree with you that it's weird to see like podcasters be the, like a lot of times be the ones who are getting so much crucial information from. And I think it's because a lot of us had a lot of crazy information in our heads and we just finally figured out the right way to get it out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So podcasting for me was kind of like that. I was a long time listener to a million different podcasts, nonfiction and fiction all over the board. And eventually I was like, how did it take me this long to realize I could be just expressing myself, throwing it out there, trying to join the greater community with a podcast? And it'd be so easy with the technology today. And I've been kind of interested in psychedelics and ancient history and mysticism and symbolism and all that kind of stuff for, you know, over two decades at this point. So this was the natural thing to do at this point in my life.
And how long have you been doing these podcasts? You know, say the Deep Share, how long you've been doing that one?
I started a year ago this past week. So yeah, it's been about a year.
Right on. Now, when you look at back at like pre-2020 and all the events that have happened, you know, I like to say if I would have been in a coma and I would have woke up, I don't even know if I would have wanted to wake up to the shit show that we're in. But it's pretty crazy how much things have changed and how, you know, divided people are. But in a sense, you know, there's a lot of awakening going on. Did you ever think that we could get to the point that we're at looking back, you know, before 2020, that, you know, looking at the state of the world?
There were so many false starts in my experience so far. Like I'm 36 and I feel like I've seen a lot of little baby false starts into this big revolution. You know what I mean? And now it does feel different. It feels more than the other little false starts in the past. You know what I mean? So I think right now we're at a crucial point where we really do have the means to let this snowball if we can keep pushing. And I think the pushback is going to be equally as hard. You know, the stronger we get, the more pissed off the opposition is going to become. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right on for sure. Now, I want to talk, of course, spirituality, but I think for me, a big part of my spirituality was experiencing psychedelic experiences. And it start, you know, that started as I was being stupid, a teenager, and I was partying with it, you know, using it for all the wrong reasons, even though I did have plenty of profound experiences doing it that way, you know. But, you know, I kind of let off on that in, you know, my 20s and 30s and revisited it after I was kind of, you know, told to through an experience that I had. And I'm so glad that I did because that it changed everything. But for you, how did your experiences with psychedelics begin? Because I know that you had you have some, you know, profound experiences as well.
Yeah, I was 19 when it really hit. I had taken acid before that, but I think my brain was just not where it needed to be to experience it in the right way. So I got goofy and it got weird, but I don't think I maybe didn't take enough. But when I was 19 and took 5 grams of mushrooms, that's when it really, yeah, right away, man. And I didn't know what I was doing. Of course, you know, you always heard, I don't know about you, but the rumor, the stereotype was it's like weed, but way stronger, man. That is the worst explanation,
yeah. Oh, God.
But I heard it from all the older kids back then. It was ridiculous. But yeah, that was what really set me off, even though it was like 8 hours of total deep euphoria. And I think there was a lot of wisdom in there. Right. And the thing is, it was all a blur when I came back. It was that very typical, like almost Terrence McKenna, when he says like, this is the most amazing thing. This is the most amazing thing. This is, what am I talking about? Where did it go? It's already gone. Like a dream, it fades away.
Yeah.
So months down the road, I took a quarter of mushrooms and my goal was to introspectively look back at that original trip and go, what was it that I experienced that was so profound that immediately sent me into insanity? I mean, I was the crazy man immediately. So what was it? Because I couldn't pinpoint anything. My brain was just scattered. So that experience was much more vivid. And it's like almost when you're in that zone, you know how when you take psychedelics, it's like intuition and your ego kind of like work together in a way,
yeah.
You know, so it's a little easier to manifest, I guess you could say.
Ego kind of takes a backseat a lot of times, yeah. And intuition takes control, you know?
Right. It really gives you that magical power, you know? Yeah. And so when you decide to do something, it kind of goes. So when I decided to like reflect into that original trip, yeah, it was like an Indiana Jones experience of literally caverns and massive mountain ranges of thought, and that lasted for eons and eons. And I felt like I had aged thousands of years learning everything. It was the hero's journey, if I could describe it any way. Reading The Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell, probably like 6 months or a year after that, just changed everything. I was like, oh my God, this is my new Mr. Rogers. What else does this guy have to say? So yeah, that was my initial first couple trips. And after that, it was just, no one could relate to me because everybody came back, at least my friends, talking about giggling and some colors and, you know, thinking about time differently, but nothing of the magnitude of what I had really experienced. I spoke to what I assume was God or the ultimate self or whatever it is that is kind of like the capstone of this whole system or whatever, you know, almost like as if God is like a culmination of all points of consciousness or something. I don't know. But experiencing that and having like a moment of reverence with that presence was just unforgettable and life-changing altogether. And the message was simple. It always has been, it always will be, and it just is okay.
Man, you know, I wish I would have gotten that kind of understanding at an earlier age, because my first experience is so similar to what you just said. I kind of, I don't think I've told this maybe but one time on the air, my first experience with psychedelics was with acid, and I probably took more than I should have, but we were going out to the woods, and I was having a great time with a couple of my friends. We were walking around the woods, and this is in the kind of Louisiana, South Louisiana swampy areas, so it's really kind of spooky, and it was almost getting dark, and then it starts to really hit me, and I'm like, wow, man, like the trees are moving and breathing, and like there's like bugs kind of just crawling on everything, and I don't know if they're there or not. And then they have big bugs, and I'm like, wow. And then my friends, I look around and they're gone. And I'm like, where did they go? And I'm like, I don't care. And I like start like just kind of wandering off, and I kind of gaze into this tree that's got all this like bugs and all these weird swirlies going around in it. And I was gone. Like the next thing I know, I don't know what happened. I was in this other world. Hours pass by and I don't remember. I just get little bits and pieces of fragments of memory of what happened. Like I just remember me melting into a grate and I'm surrounded by a little league team. And it was the strangest things. And to make a long story short, I don't know how I survived. Like my friends found me, but I was like walking dazed in a neighborhood, knocking on people's car windows as they pass by slowly, because they see this crazy man kind of walking in a daze. And as they pass by, I would kind of tap on their car windows. And like, it was, man, it took me like hours to come out of that state. And then my friends had to, you know, do something to get, I don't know what they did. They sat me down and talked to me for a while, but luckily I came out of that. And I was like, you know, the next day I was kind of, I need to know what happened. I need to do that again. It was like, wait, why do I need to do that again? That was probably terrifying. But, you know, I had this desire to find out what the hell was behind all of that and what really happened. I never figured out what happened. But, yeah, I had that desire. And I wish I would have got that understanding, because I just played around with it for years after that and was like a kind of party thing for me and didn't get that deep understanding. But I think it's because I really wasn't using mushroom psilocybin. That's where I got that deep kind of spiritual understanding from. But man, I just found it so similar.
Yeah, I would definitely say that the mushrooms hit me harder for sure. A lot of people you know, especially people that haven't tried it and they're just basing their ideas on what people tell them from their experiences. I hear a lot of people that haven't done psychedelics that are thinking about it say, I would definitely do mushrooms, but I don't know, acid. Not even in like a conspiratorial, like, oh, the government was involved. Yeah. Just simply that it's acid. Yeah. And the reputation is just simply so much darker. Yet
it is.
I've had absolutely beautiful, light,
yes.
Just transformative, not Indiana Jones, crazy, nightmarish discovery type trips, but beautiful, therapeutic trips on acid more than anything. And I know people can say the same thing about psilocybin. They could say it about MDMA. You know, I mean, it really is the observer for the most part. I think we play a huge role in how these different substances actually differentiate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just want to say that the acid is the same thing for me. Like after I was seeking that kind of what happened to me, that was such a profound experience. It never was the same after that. And I didn't reach those deep levels of, you know, a connection. You know, when I started using the psilocybin, I felt this connection to everything, you know, connection to nature and the universe. And with LSD, it was kind of like more like this, you know, just I felt euphoric and saw pretty colors and stuff, but never got that deep feeling, you know.
I've definitely had some wild revelations on acid, but it was more focused on the like turning a molehill into a mountain kind of stuff, you know, like little decisions that seem like you're climbing the steps of Babylon, you know, like just grandiose feelings about small things. Like that's how acid kind of expanded in that sense. But mushrooms, man, I think it's because, I mean, the chemical makeup is so close to DMT.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's only like, I think it's like a carbon atom or there's one or two atoms different or something like that. Things are in a different place on the molecule, but it's so close to that, which is endogenous to us anyway. So I think that might be why mushrooms, at least for me, I don't know. I've found them to be much more personal. Much more of a self-revelatory experience more than a psychedelic. I think acid's more easily used in the party zone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or at least in my experiences.
I don't know how, you know, you obtain the mushrooms or whatever, but when you want to talk a personal experience, whenever I was using the mushrooms as a kind of spiritual exploration tool, and this was a couple of years ago, well, almost 2 years ago, I was growing them myself, and the connection that I felt, like, you know, I talk to them and try and establish this connection, this kind of woo-woo connection as they were growing and take good care of them. But to experience, like, you know, the effects of that, you know, whenever you've, you know, kind of grown them and taken care of them yourself, that's like, it's may have been just a placebo type, you know, connection with it, but it seems so much more personal. And like these things like appreciated me and it was amazing, you know, it was a very great experience.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because my wife and I have been on this journey this year of also growing our own food and just doing more DIY projects and things like that. And, you know, we're going to start incorporating cannabis and mushrooms not just psychedelic mushrooms, but lion's mane and different things that we can get our hands on for our future food forests and everything, because they're all applicable. They all work together. You know, they are all part of that system. So it's a beautiful thing. And I think that is why mushrooms just gave me that very personal experience. But man, I'll be talking to my future mushrooms for sure. Establishing that connection, like I come in peace.
Oh yeah. I'd have little, you know, half hour conversations with him while I was, you know, airing them out and talking to him and stuff. It was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. Now, before we move away from psychedelics too much, could you tell us maybe some of the most profound experiences you've had with psilocybin or any other type of psychedelics that may have shifted your perception in a way that, you know, you really remember this experience?
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say one trip on acid that I had, and again, this was kind of mountain into a molehill, but it was a chain reaction in life where I had just started seeing this young woman, and she was really nice. We really liked each other. And she was very much a sleeping person. You know, she didn't really think about anything, and she was just very scared of all the big questions and stuff like that. Meanwhile, you got me, you know, balls deep in mushrooms and all kinds of stuff. So I got a buddy coming in, and we're going to take acid together. And she does not know the difference between what acid is and heroin or crack or cocaine. We were young. This is early 20s. She was, yeah. But she told me, she gave me an ultimatum that we were through. And it was like probably a month or two in. And I had pretty strong feelings for this woman. And yeah, we were through if I did something like that. That's like some crazy druggy stuff, junky stuff. It didn't understand what was going on. A lot, like most people don't. And I decided, well, I'll just lie because I can just do a little white lie, no big deal. And that night when the boys got together and we took acid, he brought liquid acid and it was incredible. And we were in my friend's room and a bunch of us were playing music and stuff. And for me, the walls were just closing in constantly. Everything kept feeling horrible. And I knew that thought about lying to her was like in there, but I didn't really recognize it until I started seeing the word liar all over the walls, everywhere. And this cascading experience turned into this 4-hour ordeal where I couldn't go back inside, even though it was January in New England, because it was too confined. And I felt like everything was trying to crush me to death. And, you know, we had a sober friend with us who, you know, a sober friend to the tripping mind is the guru. Like, oh, he knows how to open refrigerators and all yeah. kind of answer phone calls and things like that. So, you know, putting into very simple, plain English for me in this deep psychedelic state of standing up for my own values and not letting my emotions run my life, at least at that time period, sent shockwaves through my young life. And I think good ways and bad, but mostly in a positive sense, because it gave me wings and it gave me bravery. So I had to own up to my truth, right? I had to tell this girl I did the drugs, you know? Oh, yeah. And she was so sad and so upset. And I was, you know, sad for her going through that experience. That's when it switched, man. That's when I realized that there was a very big difference between my own feelings, my own emotions, and someone else's, and that they can coexist together. Because before that, I was kind of an emotional wreck as a late teen, young 20 something crazy guy, you know, just, I didn't have it all put together. And this really helped me understand empathy on such a deeper level. So that's just one of many crazy ones.
I love that story because it really goes to show for me, psychedelics is like having a therapist in my head for 8 hours yelling at me, bringing up all the things that I don't want to look at that I've hidden deep down inside. But he'll be like, no, look at this. Look at it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like the whole time. And until I face that and do that, the trip's going to be awful. It's going to be terrible. I'm going to be running from, you know, shadows. I'm going to be scared. I'm not going to feel good. I'm going to be paranoid about everything until I face what that little therapist is trying to pull up and show me. And I'll sit down, meditate, face that demon. And it'll be terrifying at times, but then afterwards you're like, yes, you feel so good. You feel like you've accomplished something. And I think that's what it's all about. That's what the psychedelic experience is supposed to be about, learning and trying to fix your own shit, you know? You don't have to go to a therapist. You got Mother Nature right here to take care of it, you know?
Yeah, and also to gain the tools from the psychedelics to do it sans psychedelics sometimes as well. Like you mentioned meditation.
Sure.
And I don't meditate anywhere near as much as I would like to just because of life, right? That's always the excuse. But, you know, I do. And I've never gotten to the realms of psychedelics where I do have friends that sit down for 30 seconds and they're already deep in it. And they come back with unbelievable revelations and experiences and healing and all that. So I'm getting there. My wife's also getting there. She's better than I am at it. But it's like, you know, we have this innate inside of us. And I think the psychedelics just hold the door open more than anything else, you know? Yes. But another weird experience I had, just to take it in a completely different direction for you. Have you ever had the Truman Show experience under psychedelics?
I mean, I think I probably have quite often, but what is your version?
In the sense of like solipsis, where suddenly everything, you made it all up, everything, every part of life. That is some of the creepiest shit ever, because I think a lot of it is ego, misunderstanding a deeper lesson when we have that Truman Show experience. Because for me, I was convinced, man, without a good podcast community that I did, you know, the internet wasn't what it was. My friends didn't get it. They didn't have these experiences with me. I felt very scared that at times I was like, holy shit, did I make all of this up? And that some of those psychedelic trips were, I had one experience where my friend was telling a story that I walked into. He didn't even know I was really there. And it was, I swear to you, I couldn't even give you the example, but it was my childhood experience. Such a random little moment in a day as a kid. He was telling a story and it was my story. Something that happened to me, just an embarrassing little moment, or I can't remember what it was. But I swear he looked at me and blinked or winked at me. And, you know, I was under 5 grams of psilocybin. So who fucking knows? But that stuff like that would happen. Weird, creepy. And I've heard it reported from a number of people. And it weirds me out to this day. It's a conundrum I still have no deeper answers for. Just a lot of weird little centers of universes running into each other, all playing together or something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Now, one more thing before we move on, because this is such a fun topic. Have you ever had any shared experiences? Like, I remember as a teenager driving to a concert, driving, I shouldn't have been. I wasn't driving. One of my friends was, but he was still under the influence of LSD. And we all were. And we're driving stupidly from a small town in Louisiana to a concert in New Orleans, which we did quite often, stupidly. And we're on the way there and we're like in the middle of it. We're almost, you know, 2 or 3 hours in, and I look over a driver and he's looking at his hands and I'm looking at his hands and he's like, what? And we both see it. He's like, I got Mickey Mouse hands. I'm like, you got Mickey. And everybody sees it at the same time. We got 2 other people in the back seat looking at his hands like, oh my God. Then all of a sudden we look at the road and it's like, it starts twisting and turning and we start screaming. We're like, look at the road. We all see it do the same thing at the same time. Needless to say, he has to pull over for a couple of hours, and we didn't make it to the concert on time. But it was pretty insane. And before that, the same night, we're kind of playing around in the yard, and you know, I was a regular teenager. I wasn't an athlete in any shape of the way. You know, I wasn't unhealthy or anything, but I had never done any type of gymnastics or anything like that. I was playing around and I was like, man, I feel like doing a front flip. And I was just under the influence. I did it. I have witnesses. I did like 2 front flips in a row and I have no idea how I did it, because I could never recreate that. I could never do that again.
Intuition, man.
But I completely
you were in
believe
line with it.
It just opens up areas of the brain that we can't access otherwise. And we have
you
access
see that free
to,
flow,
you know?
Yeah. Like thoughts, like conclusions to thoughts that, you know, would just trail off into wonder before suddenly so come with such ease. And you're like, I feel like a superhuman. What is happening? You know, and it is such a complex and entertaining topic. And we could go on with that for 10 hours.
Yeah, sure. We sure could.
For sure.
We have to do this again. But I know that you sent me something very interesting in the email. And that's a book called The Box Saga, which I've never really heard of. I've never looked into, but it looks super interesting. And I was hoping you could share with us in the audience a little bit about what your understanding of it is.
Yes. So, and this also will be a nice little bridge from psychedelics, because one profound experience I had that I didn't mention leads me to why the Box Saga has hit me so hard. And it's just kind of taken over my exploratory psyche right now. I had an experience, I believe it was part of that 8-gram extravaganza where I was just like Indiana Jones or something. It could have been another time, but I came out of the experience at one point to my friends saying, there's a hidden story inside of language, not just one language, but it goes across all languages. It's like hidden within human syntax. And of course, everybody looked at me like I was crazy. I looked at myself like I was crazy the next day. I moved on. That was like 15 years ago. And I'm not claiming that I necessarily had superhuman access to something, but the synchronicity of this Box Saga situation is nuts. Because what the Box Saga, what the main importance of the Box Saga is a language that, according to this saga, the very first families on the earth were using. And this language is named basically from the inside out. It's an organic language that is, it names body parts first and act, you know, very personal things first, and then moves outward into the world. But when studying this language, I'm finding that the modern languages we have today and the word magic that a lot of people in our community like to talk about, puns and stuff like that, and how everything has double meanings, it all stems back to this root language from this story, where all of these sounds that we all create today in all of our different variations in language come from, these original sounds that go along with this Box Saga story. It's really interesting stuff. And it makes a lot of big claims, of course, and I think a lot of it could be arbitrary, but that's why my friend Dan Anaki Dan, a friend Jake Hogstrom from Sweden, and myself have started Roots of Creation, which is a podcast exploring the Box Saga and speaking to Jake's friends, who are the main people who received this story from the last remaining member of this family that is supposedly the first family on Earth. So, and talk about a big claim.
Oh, yeah. When was it supposedly written?
So the Box Saga, an introduction, the book was put out in 2017, I believe, by Carl Borgen. And Carl is a good friend of Michelle Merle, who was the primary storyteller. He was the one who was closest to this man who had the story to reveal. And his name was Eeyore Bock. So let's take this slowly, of course, because there's a lot of moving parts here.
And it was just like, supposedly this is just an orally passed down story through generations?
Right. And the reason for the oral tradition and this oral language itself is that as soon as as they say in the saga, the black ink hits white paper, we can have pronunciation differentiation. You know what I mean? Suddenly, letters can be changed and letters can sound different depending on who's saying them and where these letters are being passed. So the oral tradition keeps the pronunciations intact, which are the only way to kind of trace this back to the root language itself.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
To see the importance of this ruling, it's crazy how it's all built on language. And we can start to piece our history together and start to see where names evolved and where, like, places became places. It's really fascinating stuff. And we can go all over, but there's a lot to cover, and it's kind of hard to start at a certain point, but we can just kind of pick somewhere, you know what I mean?
Well, let's start with the origin of these basic sounds that kind of evolved into language. Was it just something that was self-taught, or was there involvement some off-planet?
So also the saga takes a lot of our history, our ancient history and our religious history, and kind of rehumanizes it away from any ideas of extraterrestrials. Honestly, it's interesting to see it because it's almost like, it almost feels like Occam's razor in a way, where not to dismiss extraterrestrials, but to suggest a different perspective on how we interpret these ancient stories we have. Right. For instance, and we could talk a great deal about this because I know you'll like this. We have a lot of ancient history to do with tall, blue-eyed gods. Yes. Tall, blonde, blue-eyed gods. We could talk about Copulcan. We could talk about Viracocha. What's the other one from South America? Quetzalcoatl, the snake, the plumed serpent. And then, of course, you go all the way over to the Persian Gulf and you have it again. You have more of these, you know, you have the Enki and the Enlil, and you have all these same, very similar gods across this vast region. But there's another way to look at it if you look at the Box Saga, because the Box Saga has a very bizarre origin story about the Earth. And it says that a long time ago, the Earth wasn't tilted on its axis. It claims that it was on, like, it hadn't tilted at all. It was straight up and down. So the North Pole was Helsinki, Finland. But it wasn't called Helsinki back then. It was called Hell. So it's interesting. Immediately, it's interesting to see the inversion of where that word has gone and, you know, what it's become. It stands for somewhere hot, of course, and this is up north. So the origin story is that when this tilt happened, this was the first Ragnarok. And the first Ragnarok caused a massive ice age on the planet. And when this happened, the entire, you know, northern hemisphere was completely decimated by ice. Most everything was killed off or desperately struggling for life. But oddly enough, the saga claims, and this is supposedly, you know, oral tradition for the past 1,000 years, that this Gulf Stream that we have back then would go over this area of Helsinki and keep things a little bit warmer. And also the volcanic activity in that area of the Earth, I guess, also heated underground caverns and things like that. So when this ice age happened, this little paradise basically stayed intact. And when that happened, these people that were in that area were able to survive and thrive throughout this ice age and continue to develop and create and educate themselves and each other. And eventually, when the ice age ended, the saga calls it the second Ragnarok. And of course, we call it the deluge or the flood and all that. Then we have all these gods coming into the world, and we have the Nephilim mixing with the humans, right? And that's another part of the saga, that before this ice age, everyone on the planet was tropical. So the saga suggests that the white race literally comes out of these isolated people that were surrounded by a massive ice wall and couldn't leave this area in the North Pole, or the old North Pole, which was now Helsinki, Finland. And we can go into the history behind, you know, there's evidence supposedly to support these claims of where these things were and Catholic invasions and this family going off and hiding treasure. It's an amazing story to get into.
Yeah, man, let's do it. I mean, I don't know where we should take off from there, but I'm wondering, why do you think
ask some questions at that point.
Well, yeah, I just want
so much to take in there.
I want to get your thoughts on why you think this is such a hidden story. Do you think it's kind of like a game of ancient telephone where everything got misinterpreted, or are these things hidden on purpose from those powers in control?
I'm thinking it's a little bit of both. There's the more we look into this, my co-host and I, the more we see a game of telephone in a way where a lot of our modern dualities are just falling apart, where we see a lot of words and names in this saga. Like Jesus is a name in the saga. Ra is a very important name in the saga, and it's the king. It means the king. And he was the son. He was the first son. The Ra was the first son of the head of the family, the Bach, the eldest, the elder. It's weird. You can see where, if the saga is correct, where this name Ra kept some of the attributes that the saga is talking about in Egypt, where it's still a king and it's a sun king. It's the first son. This is where we get into the language aspect of it.
That's interesting. So you think that these ancients that were kind of trapped in this ice wall may have been maybe mistaken as gods when they emerged into the rest of the uncivilized world?
Yeah, the story goes that these were the, you know, I think in the alien UFO community, we've always kind of referred to them as the Nordics.
The Nordics, right.
You know, the more you learn about the Nordic stories from the UFO community, though, it's like, well, man, it's like they kind of enveloped this whole situation. What the hell? I mean, let's hold off on these, like, whatever, 57 other species of possible aliens. Let's focus on these guys, because these guys seem to, you know, align or match up or come close to a lot of other conspiracies like crater Earth theory, where maybe the Earth is much bigger perhaps, and there's, you know, the aliens are actually just other species that we don't know about, other sentient beings that are on other parts of the Earth or something.
Yeah.
Inner Earth theory, where Bach Saga talks about these subterranean like catacomb areas that they basically were living during that ice time period. So it's all this inner earth. They're always building underground, and there's massive golden staircases, supposedly. It mixes a lot of our modern conspiracy theories, but this was released in 1984. Eeyore Bach said that his family was holding on to this in secret for the past 1,000 years. And 1986, I think it was. 86 was the year that marked that 1,000 years. And it was said that, okay, now it's to be released. And you look back and he tells the story of his mother and her sister teaching him every day for 20 years this root language and the story of their family and all the traditions. And it's a very intriguing tale.
And what better way to kind of hide this story than with an alien psyop that, you know, they're coming from the sky and different planets, when there just could be humans that, you know, ancient advanced humans. And you always look at, you know, the ancient alien stories and all these things that were trying to be pushed into the mainstream consciousness over the past few years, coinciding with the UFO stuff. It gets you thinking that maybe, you know, they're trying to get you look in a different direction. And why couldn't our ancient ancestors have just been really advanced, smart humans, you know?
Could have been. And that's not to, again, it's not to discredit the possibility of, you know, extraterrestrial life forms somewhere else coming or not. But yeah, it rehumanizes things. Again, it's the Occam's razor sort of effect, where it's like, hey, this could be, these are real stories. And it almost seems like the Nephilim story. I mean, so what we've been also exploring, especially with this linguistic angle, is the fact that in Norse mythology, you have Niflheim, Niflheim is like the land of the dead. It described in many ways, but then you over here in the Persian Gulf religions and you have the Nephilim, which phonetically speaking, the more you look into the Bog Saga, the more you see phonetics is where it's at. And that's where we need to be focused on if we really want to understand where our languages actually come from. It's what were the sounds that were being used and what did the oral traditions suggest? You know what I mean?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. What are some of the most profound aspects of language and those sounds that you're referring to that you've come across in this saga?
So let's do, can we do a screen share?
Yeah, hold on. Let me turn it on for you here.
Cool. I'll show you the alphabet.
There you go. You're good.
Just pull it up real quick.
Yeah, sure.
And again, I'd like to tell you and your audience that almost no one is an expert on this because of how vast and kind of mind-blowing this is.
Yeah.
Because of, like, it's just such a huge story to wrap your head around. So a lot of times, forgive me if I draw a blank sometimes, because, you know, this is hard stuff. We're talking about like deconstructing our modern languages. But from what my friend Yake says, I cannot find a good picture of the alphabet. So I'm just going to not bother with it right now. I apologize for that, Chris.
Yeah, no
but
worries.
It's called Alphornis Beton, which is really creepy how close to English it sounds. And these are stories that come from the Finnish woodlands. You know, these are mythologies, like the Väinämöinen mythology is one of many mythologies that were collected thousands, you know, over time from, you know, dating back thousands of years that, you know, where English seems to creep in everywhere. It's very weird how, my friend Yake has told us that the Swedish people today literally speak in a way the old root language of the Bog Saga, and that all Germanic languages come from the Bog Saga, the root language. It's really weird. I'm trying to pull up some like good analogies here for us. But man, it's pretty difficult. But let's talk about something that we all love, Atlantis.
Oh, yeah.
So in root language, that word is there in the story. And it's Altlantis. And it means all land ice. And so it's telling a story a little bit. It's actually describing a time period, an ice time. We're talking about that Ragnarok time period where it was an ice age. So they're actually telling a story with that name instead of it actually being a specific location. Isn't that bizarre?
I love it, man. Yeah. And whenever you were telling me, the initial synopsis of this a few minutes ago, I was thinking, man, this could be, you know, how the true Atlantis story, and it could have been either manipulated on purpose or just misconstrued like we were talking about. That's so interesting.
Yeah, man.
To think that this is just like an advanced breakaway civilization that was hidden in ice.
Well, and the most amazing part about that connection is that the Bog Saga describes the formation of the cities, I guess you could say, or the villages as ring lands. So everything was in rings. So Atlantis is always described that way. So, I mean, when you think about it, these suspected locations of Atlantis, like the Azores, or there's, you know, a bunch of different areas that we suspect that have some pretty interesting information, they could all be applicable because all of these places seem to be in the northern hemisphere where this ice age would have been most impactful and destructive, you know? So we're talking about everyone kind of remembering this. We're just remembering it kind of the wrong way. It's really interesting. But yeah, if you look at our language, it's all loops or half loops and lines or poles. Okay. So basically the root language is based on that. It's based on loops and poles. as well. And the thing is, like I said from the beginning, that this language starts from the inside out. Another big aspect and a very controversial aspect of the Bach saga is how sexual the original spirit of these people were, without it even being necessarily what we think of in a contemporary way as sexual. It was just naturalistic, where the body and what the body is capable of and what the body is capable of with another body together in embrace and all that. This was all part of just the most revered part of life. And I guess, you know, we can see those roots everywhere in Gnostic society and heathen society and pagan culture and all the things the Catholic society will hate on and fear and say it's satanic because it's sexual and free and human and natural, right? P's and or loops and poles, right? That's what our alphabet's made out of. Well, also, this is how we are created too. Literally, that childish thing that we used to do in school, like, oh, did you guys get it on? We literally have poles and holes, you know, it's ridiculous, but it's true. And so they built this language on a very organic level. It's very bizarre. Like, for instance, barbaric, the word barbaric comes from, at least according to the saga, that their bars were bare. They were bare bars. So they were, because they were walking around naked. Because they had no egos, right? They didn't care. They're all community, you know, just like now in those areas in Scandinavia, the sweat houses, there are the bathhouses, you know, the saunas are so important. It was back then as well. And that relates directly to that ice time where they were literally immersed in those subterranean areas with those pools of hot water, and it became part of their lives. So it's very interesting to see all the little points in our everyday culture that reflect what they suggest in the saga. It's pretty crazy.
It is. And it makes me think of, I had Susan Bradford on yesterday. We were talking about Tartaria and hijacked timelines and hijacked history. And I wonder if these were some of the, you know, some of these advanced early civilizations that were more peaceful and advanced and were doing things kind of the right way, that maybe these barbaric, like the Catholic Church, these institutions come along. They destroy any evidence that they've existed and kind of take over everything in this new dystopian way that we're seeing manifest even more right now in our society. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think it's all connected, man. It's definitely all interlaced in that way. It's unavoidable, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much to it.
It makes me wonder if there is still kind of a breakaway society tied to this that's around today that maybe is kind of fighting in the shadows against some of the tyranny that we're seeing right now. Because I don't see, you know, from what you're telling me about this civilization, I don't see how they could be the cause of some of this negativity. Although we don't know, you know, everything is upside down. Man, there's so much in our reality that you have to turn on its end and look at upside down and be like, wait, this looks better this way. I think I'm going to go with it like this. And it's sad to see that we have to analyze and put our own reality through this filter about everything that we see around us. You know, it's like putting a puzzle together. And, you know, I think the earlier in life you understand that it's not just what you see is what you get, you know, the better off things will be for you, you know?
Well, dude, and the breakaway civilization idea with the Bach saga is leading me to actually start thinking that at one point someone knew this root language, and how keeping all the words the same and the syllables the same, you know, being able to say these words the right way to connect it all together. They knew how important that was to keep all of our the link, basically the keystone to understanding our history together, and they knew how to twist it.
Yeah.
So I do think part of it was definitely accidental and just us naturally forgetting. But because of that, someone who knew definitely took advantage, I think. because they understood this language. And that's why, you know, you have people on conspiracy shows talking about how, why do we say good morning? Why do we use this word morning? Like, and all these double meanings. And, you know, we think we're saying good things, but we're saying bad things because the English language is heavily coded and twisted. And that's what I'm finding most about this root language, is how language has been changed and morphed, and who did it, and when did the change happen? You know, that's what we're looking into. We're looking into, you know, the Templars and what was going on in that time period. What did they find out really that completely changed that trajectory? And, you know, there's just so many angles to it that tie together. And when we look at it from the saga's perspective, we yield a lot of results, like looking at the Viking culture itself. The saga suggests that it started with two brothers, Sven and Dan. And Dan went one way and Sven went the other. Now, the language is organic. The language is all about shapes that you can perform, you know, use with your body and movements in life. The language and the letters, the symbols are tied to events. So when we think of Viking with the V, we're thinking of the two brothers splitting and going different directions. We're literally looking at the V as a symbol of what those two brothers did. And one went to the area now known as Sweden, and Dan went over and formed Denmark. That is their take on it. And how that word formed, they formed a two-king system, a bi-king system, a vi-king system. Isn't that weird? It just could be coincidence, right? But the more you look at, and I'm not giving the best examples here, I'll let, there's a lot to uncover, and mostly you got to read the book for sure. I highly recommend getting The Bok Saga, An Introduction by Carl Borgen, because you're going to get loads of these examples of the language ties, and it's just going to, every page is going to blow your mind.
Yeah, man.
And how all these words connect, you know?
It's definitely on my list of books to get. I'm wondering, is there anything mentioned about the use of tone or frequency in combination with the language that holds some kind of difference in your, you know, application or effects on your consciousness?
Absolutely. I think just the bare bones basic point about the root language's use of phonetics and how phonetics literally match up with the sound that it matches with to form that resonant frequency. So we're talking about a resonant field. We're talking about a language that exists because of this resonance, this frequency. You know what I mean? It's actually, you know what, let me see if I can pull up this quote I had. I mean, bad radio.
no, it's all good. And I want to also get your thoughts on how possibly advanced do you think that these ancients were when it comes to the technology? You know, you hear some pretty fantastical stories about things like Atlantis, but I'm wondering, with a society like this, I'm sure the technology would be much different than anything we could have ever imagined, probably much more efficient and less reliant on material aspects, I would imagine.
Yeah, much more naturalistic, of course. I actually have not uncovered too much yet describing the technology involved with this, you know, all land ice time period, Scandinavian people. What it suggests, it's not like going off in any particular direction, like they had flying machines or they had architecture. But what it does suggest is, if you look at the length of our most recent ice age, and if you imagine human beings outside of that protective zone, not thriving and not moving forward, while another species, another group of individuals was, I can't even imagine how much more advanced that culture would be. You know what I mean? There's got to be one massive gap in understanding. And no wonder it was like gods or aliens, perhaps, because of how different the culture would be. You know, I mean, we look at Arctic creatures like bears and foxes and things like that, they all turn white up there, right? Their hair turns these brighter colors. Their eyes turn those brighter colors. And supposedly so do these humans, right?
Yeah.
So it could have gone that way, you know, but they could have been so much more advanced that we literally could have that breakaway civilization from this. And they could somehow maybe be the ones that, I don't know, are aware of the root language and knew how to like twist English or form English in that way. It's really weird. But yeah, I do have the quotes. I have some really good quotes here. So saga in the Bach saga says that the word saga itself means to get and to give. So that's something cool. According to the saga, the root language was the first language on our planet. It was formulated in the brain of the first human. It is a simple natural language that firstly describes body parts and analog to that, a person's immediate surroundings, nature. So I already said this part, the heavens above, and from there on, it progresses to abstract concepts. Many times the meaning of the sounds in the root echoes from the human body's layer of meaning to the other layers of meaning just described. When in symphonic music, a discordant note is played, you can immediately hear it is not in harmony. The same is true for spoken words that do not fit into the Bach saga. When names of facts are given that are not in harmony with the sound system, we know it does not fit into the story and is fictitious. The sound system is carried by the root language. I could go on if you don't mind. This is
fascinating. Yeah.
Since the meaning of the sounds are fixed and cannot be altered, the saga can be passed on to the next generation without any changes in its purest form. Just as mathematics is the language in which the natural cohesion between numbers is described and can be thus passed on, so is the root language, the natural means of describing the Bach saga. The saga differs in that it lays on top of what is called this sound system, which is similar to a mathematical matrix that controls what is true and what is not in the saga. This particular matrix is formed by the root language. All syllables, words, and sentences are combinations of these building blocks of the meaningful sounds themselves. So that's just to give you a little deeper look from Carl's words from the book.
Man, that's really cool. I'm going to definitely have to look into these books for sure. Now, for the last few minutes that we have, what thoughts can we leave the audience with about what we've discussed about the Bach saga? Maybe something we haven't covered or something profound?
So there's an excavation underway right now that desperately needs help. And we haven't set it up yet, but I think we're considering starting some sort of GoFundMe or something like that, because it's all the people that were close to Eeyore. Eeyore has passed. He passed in 2010, and he was assassinated, interestingly enough, the man who had passed the story down. And that's a deep, twisty story as well. But I would definitely urge people to look into the Lemminkainen Temple, and I can send you links.
Yes, please do.
You can spread them with your listeners so they can look into it, because it's kind of the linchpin, the possible linchpin. And they've done all kinds of radar and different tests on the ground and LIDAR to see that there is cavernous areas that they have written about in the Bach saga, that a lot of these ancient treasures with proof of this family lineage was hidden, because supposedly in 1050, the Catholics came into this area of Helsinki and wiped everybody out. But this Bachstrom family had forewarning and had hit the hills and took off running and tried to escape persecution, because this Catholic force was coming for the heathens.
Wow.
And we can go into, you know, think about our first episode of Roots of Creation is called The Garden of Heathen, because heaven, heathen, these words all sound similar for a reason. Our language is the key, and every one of us can be just as important and crucial in pushing more of this or should I say, unfolding more of this saga, because the saga is alive. I mean, we've been waiting for a living language, and here it is, because yes. This thing is, every one of us can think critically about our own experiences and our own language, our own words, and look at, from the context of the saga, once you start to get it, once you learn about it, and you can become a scientist yourself in this category. You can start to bring new examples and new ideas to even us that are right at the heart of this thing, looking into it all the time. Michelle Merle, who was the main storyteller, still is, from Eeyore's story, he even says, every day I'm learning new things that incorporate what I've learned from the saga into what only makes sense out here in the real world. It's pretty wild stuff, man.
Yeah, man, we live in an incredible time to be alive. And, you know, look back at a couple of years ago, all the stuff that everybody was calling conspiracy, man, a lot of that is just truth now. And it's not even looked as you know, conspiracy anymore. It's just the way things are. And, you know, hopefully that'll keep happening and we'll just keep seeing things for the way they really are, you know?
Absolutely, man. I feel like the big bad guys, whatever you want to call them, they all know that this is just that time in the cycle. And that's why our pushback is so hard, because they're just trying to avoid the inevitable. That's all it is. I mean, Yes. The chess game has already been won. You know, they're just making as many useless moves as they can.
Yes, exactly. I've used that analogy before myself, man. Nice. That's a great one. Right on, man. That was this is awesome conversation, Andy. Now, for the audience, for sure, we're gonna have to do this again. For the audience that wants to find out more about you, your podcast, website, social media, all that good stuff, let them know.
Cool. Yeah, I do have a website. It's thedeepshare.com, but I don't do much on there. Eventually, I would like to develop it more. But, you know, I'm not getting kicked off of social media because I don't really talk about COVID or anything like that.
Right.
I used, you know, when you look at the ancient past, you just start to see the patterns. You don't have to really talk about today to describe the same fucking scenarios.
Yeah.
So, So my social media, you can find me at the Deep Share Podcast on Instagram, the Deep Share on Twitter. I'm on YouTube and Odyssey. I'm on Rockfin, but I haven't put anything up there yet. I'm getting a Patreon together, premium side together, where I'm going to be doing a new series called The Witness, which I did promote on my regular feed a while back. I did 4 big roundtables all focused on altered states of consciousness and different paths to get there, you know, psychedelics, paranormal experiences, alien encounters, near-death experience. We're looking at the whole gamut from multiple angles, you know, simulation theory. We're kind of just putting it all together and see where the conversation takes us in small intimate roundtables. So that's going to be cool. So I'm going to get that running. And recently my wife and I started our own little premium show that we're going to be starting as well, called Deep Healing, a little sideshow from the Deep Share, where we talk about our own healing journeys, and hopefully it'll inspire some people and, you know, just relate, you know, about, different aspects and different ways to, you know, get through the day and get through the year with all the chaos of the world out there, you know,
right,
our experiences.
On, yeah. I love it. Sounds like me, 100 different projects going on, but that's great.
Dude, I'm trying to diversify.
Yeah. It's a great thing, man. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. That was fantastic. And like I said, we will definitely have to have you back on in the future here. And please do
likewise.
Send me, for any time, and send me the links to all the stuff that we just talked about, anything that we should include in the description for the audience to do their own
Absolutely. Research
there.
Awesome. Cause I know it can be vague, man. It's wild stuff.
It's crazy, but it's great. It's got me one to run out and look into it right now. Thank you so much.
Thanks
again,
man.
And, we'll be talking again soon. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we will talk again tomorrow.